CBA Mobile.
KB4CBA, W4DJW. Hey, David.
Mr. Watson, what are you doing, sir?
Well, I thought I was finished working a few minutes ago, but I got pulled back in. Trying to break away. I've got some batteries charging up. I'm getting some airplanes ready to go to the airfield, figuring out which transmitters they belong to and how their receiver works and how to put them together. I'm having to relearn all that. It's been so many years since I've gone out flying.
Has it been that long since you and I met up at that other field? I guess you remember that. That was the day that you went chasing after my drone.
Was I flying that little white foam, what do they call that, bloody something? I'll have to look it up on the transmitter. I didn't know which transmitter controlled it. It had a spectrum receiver in it, but I didn't have a spectrum transmitter in any of my transmitter modules. And then I had to go back and I found my Taranis case, and it had a spectrum transmitter in it, a transmit module. So I pulled it out and went and found the Taranis controller, unplugged its EZ-UHF, because it's meant for doing goggles, you know, watching through the goggles what you're flying. So I undid that and put this one in there, and lo and behold, the Bloody Wonder, that's what it is. It's a English plane. They call it the Bloody Wonder. Was I flying that one that day that we were out there? It's all white, and it's got, like, those monster claw marks on the wings and the body.
You know, David, I honestly don't remember what you were flying. I just remember you had your controller was like something I've never seen. It was definitely like some homegrown, customized and all that. But I do not, honestly do not remember the plane you were flying.
Okay, well, it was probably a Tiger Stick or a Piranha or something like that. Maybe it might have been that yellow Cub, J3 Cub, I can't remember. But anyway, I thought I'd put something easy to throw in the backseat of the car together, which is the Bloody Wonder. It's made out of it's like got ailerons and elevator. It doesn't have any rudder. It's got dual rudders, but the rudders aren't functional. But it's real easy to fly. You just hand launch it. It's got no landing gear or anything like that. You just hand launch it and you can fly it. But the batteries, it has some special batteries. And I put them on the battery charger to check them out to see if they're going to still work. And 3 out of 4 had one cell that was really low. So I'm pumping up the cell that's low up to middle mark, 3.8 volts on each one of those 3. And then they're able to take a charge, but I don't know if they'll last. So I went and placed an order for a few more batteries just in case. But it's something you can throw in the backseat of the car and go out the airfield and fly. You don't have to spend a whole lot of time putting it together and getting it started up and all that stuff. But anyway, I did find the transmit module, the transmitter, the receiver. I did take the prop off and make sure that the motor would spin when I revved it up with the throttle. So that one's going to be good to go. I might work on the Tiger Stick next. But anyway, you're wanting to fly has got me wanting to fly again. W4DJW.
What does it cost to fly at this airfield you're going to?
Well, I don't know about Foothills Flyers. What they probably have a policy that's something similar to WCRC, where if you can go with a guest like 2 or 3 times and fly, you know, and then decide whether you want to join up there or not. I think it's a lot closer than WCRC, but it's not as good of a field. In other words, WCRC, they've got pilot boxes. I think there's like 4 of them that you stand in while you're flying, and they've got like a pit area where you can put your airplanes together and clean off the oil when you're done and all that kind of stuff. Whereas Foothills Flyers don't have all that. They've got an area alongside of a fence that you walk up and carry your airplane, and then you walk out to the field and, you know, put your airplane out there and take off and fly and pick it up and walk back to wherever your car is. So it's not as nice. It doesn't cost as much either. The dues, if you decide you want to sign up, are like $75 a year, but I think they were talking about going up, versus the dues over at WCRC. I think they went up by 25. I think they're $125 now, whereas they used to be $100. But don't quote me on that. I could be wrong.
Well, I haven't even started mine yet. The first problem I have is you can't put a regular screw-on type thing on the glow plug because it has to be less than 3 inches long or it's going to hit the propeller because the glow plug leans forward and so there's a clearance issue. So I bet you I'd have to use alligator clips. And but the glow plug does work. We hooked it up. We took it out and hooked it up, and it does work. So at least I know that much. But I don't know, you know, if the carburetor stopped up or what. I haven't taken it apart. And this is a four stroke. So does it have oil like a regular four-stroke engine or what?
Just leave a little break in case somebody else was wanting to get in. No, it uses different fuel. The fuel that it uses has different kind of oil, and it's more of an oil-to-fuel mixture ratio because it's a four-stroke. So the fuel that you use, four-stroke fuel on a four-stroke. And that that glow plug being pointed at the prop, what a lot of people do is they get a clip on with a wire that clips onto the glow plug, and they relocate where they make a relocator where you can bolt the glow plug on back behind the engine away from the glow plug. But it's got a wire that runs up to a little clip that clips on the glow plug. And if you're talking about that glow plug that's in it being the glow plug that's been sitting in it for years, that coil has been oxidizing for years, it might glow and it might run one or two times, but it's probably not going to last very long at all. So you probably need to, when you go over to David's shop over at, Hobby Connection over in Easley on 123, probably need to pick up a handful of glow plugs, four-stroke glow plugs, and maybe different temperatures, because depending on where you are, different glow plugs work better for different areas. It's kind of like, you know, carburetor settings in the north aren't exactly the same as they are in the south. Batteries in the north aren't exactly as they are in the south. All right. So things are different depending on the region you're in. So you'll probably want to get a handful of glow plugs and not just depend on that one for being good to go, because glow plugs are going to burn out, right? You never know. Anytime when I was doing fuel, I always had cards full of different types of glow plugs for different conditions. I think that answered all your questions.
Well, that's good to know. So it's like a two cycle, like a chainsaw or whatever. You got to mix the oil and into the gas. Well, I just wondered because, you know, it's got a compartment up over to the one side of the engine, and I don't know what that is, but I know that sounds crazy, but I don't know what it does, but anyway, the fuel tank, I'm going to take it out and clean it. It looked pretty good, but it's got a lid on it, and I'm just going to screw it off and clean it out real good. It's really not that dirty inside.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. You might take a picture of it and send it to me on the phone so I can see what that is. I don't know what that compartment off to the side would be. I'm thinking that it's got the it's got the crankcase with a cylinder head, and it's got the valve covers, and it's got the push rods, and it's got the updraft carburetor, and it's got the glow plug, and then the bearings that hold the crankshaft in place that connect to the prop. I can't think of anything else that it might have other than that, so, or something that somebody might have added on. It's got the mufflers, but usually that's just a straight pipe on a four-stroke that just comes out and points down below the engine just to blow the castor oil and off to the side of the airplane. So might take a picture and send it, because I'm not picturing what that thing is.
Send it to you as soon as I get to the sports club. I'm headed back to the sports club to play tennis. I had a 5 o'clock game, and the guy called me at 4:30, and of course I was already almost there and canceled, so I turned around and went home, and I have a 6:30 game, so I'm on my way back now. But anyway, as soon as I get there, I'll send it to you, because I've got it on my phone.
So did Steve talk to you about getting yours ready to fly and doing all the prep work before we took it out to the field?
Not really. I mean, I want to get it running, but before I start putting any other money into it, because I don't really want to use the 72 megahertz AM controller, and I'd rather get a Spectrum controller for it. But that was my next question: is will the servos that are in there respond to a Spectrum? If I have a Spectrum receiver, will they respond to that?
So normally, you can use analog or digital servos on a receiver. Normally, if you go too far back in analog and you put a digital in them, they may not know how to do that. But if you go the other way around, if you're starting with a digital and you go back to analog, I think they'll still work. You can just try it. I interchange Futaba and JR and Spectrum and, third-party e-servos or something like that. I used to just stick to JR ball bearing steel geared servos, but those things cost about $120 a piece. And then when you start getting more and more airplanes, and each one takes 4 to 6 to 8, that starts running into the money. So I started exploring some of the cheaper servos out there, and a lot of them are interchangeable. They have like 3 pins, a positive and a negative, and a PMW. Pulse width modulation. And all it is it's being pinged at a certain rate. And as that rate changes, it moves the servo from one location to another. So it's pretty simple. And it doesn't matter if it's analog or digital. The signals are all PWM, pulse width modulation signals, to control where the wiper needs to go. So I'm thinking you should be good. Now, the power, the electricity for the servos does come through the receiver. So if you put too much, like receivers might be limited in how much power they can deliver, and a servo could require more power than a receiver has available to send to it. That could be an issue.
Poor CPA. Well, I just hate it when you bring up more problems. I guess I'll cross that bridge when I come to it, but I'm not there yet. And I've had people tell me that I won't be able to fly this plane. It's the wings on top of the plane, and it's like, I don't know, 52 inches. So it's a good size, and this guy behind me, I want to park right there, and he won't get out of the way. Oh well. Anyway, so it's been a learning curve, that's for sure.
Well, that's another reason I'm getting that foamy working. It's made out of a piece of foam board that you get from the dollar store that costs a dollar. So the airplane, the airframe costs a dollar. You do have to cut it with a razor knife and, you know, build the hinges, which are made out of tape, right, and put some control horns on them. And you do have to get a single-speed controller, electric motor, a little tiny receiver. A speed controller probably costs $5 or $6. Motor costs probably $12 or $13. And the other part, I don't know, you can probably build the whole thing for about $20 or $30, right? And you can fly all you want with it. It's real easy to fly. And you can bounce it off the ground a few times, and it won't hurt it so much. So I was going to put that together and get it up in the air and hand you the transmitter and let you get used to left and right and right to left, coming at you, going away from you, that kind of thing, before you put the one that's built out of balsa wood and all of the fancy coating and nice paint job, before you put that one up in there, just to get you used to flying in the real world. And Steve did say he's got you working with one of those simulators, too. Have you been doing that?
One, he was showing it to me, and he was flying it. And so he handed it to me, and his computer, or the program quit, and it just kept, as soon as we'd get the plane going, it would quit. And after it did it about 3 times, he said he's going to have to put the software on another computer. So I think he's done that, but I haven't been back up there to see him since then.
Okay. Well, I used to have that a long, long time ago. Mine would be way out of date, but it is good. I mean, I did use it for learning how to fly helicopters, and it made it a whole lot easier for me for when it's pointing at you versus when it's pointing away from you. You build a reflex of knowing to switch that in your head without having to think about it. And so it is worth it. I do that as much as possible if you can before you actually go out there and start flying. Just because I've taught people how to fly that have done that, and I've taught people that haven't, and the people that haven't take a whole lot longer to fly, that learn how to fly, than the people that have. W4DJW.
AB4CBA. Let me see if I got your email address here. KV4CBA, I sent you one just now, so see if you get that one.
I'm looking at it. So I see the rails that the engine is mounted on, and that's the crankcase that the engine is mounted on the rail. The rail is mounted to the airplane. And going out to the right, that's the prop. That's the front hub that's got the bearing for the crankshaft in the front and the bearing for the crankshaft in the back. Up above, that's the cylinder. Back behind, that's the carburetor. Up above the carburetor is the muffler. Over to the right of the muffler are the valve covers with the push rods going up through the push rod tubes underneath the valve cover. And then up in front of that, on the right, is the glow plug. So I don't see anything unordinary, out of the ordinary there.
Yeah, I just sent you another one. This is a view looking straight down on it, and you can see the mixture, I guess that's what it is, rod sticking out one side, and I think the other one sets the idle. On the other side, and you can see the glow plug, and it's kind of hard to tell. It kind of looks like it's sticking straight up, but it's not. It's at an angle toward the prop.
So which component are you curious about is what? The one that's pointed to the back? The muffler? The glow plug? The valve covers? The carburetor? I don't see anything other than those things that are mounted to the engine.
I don't know, Dave. I was picturing it in my mind. I guess I was seeing something that's not there. So, anyway. video on YouTube, so, and this guy had a meter that he put right in front of the prop, and it, and he set the idle with it, the idle speed, I think he was supposed to be somewhere around 2,500, 2,100, 2,500, something like that.
Do you remember if anybody was flying gas-powered while we were up there last time? I don't pay that much attention anymore because most people abandon them because they make a mess. The oil gets all over everything. And so they went to electricity because it's so much cleaner and it's much more dependable. It won't, like, get you just high enough to where you're not a whole crash level high and then run out on you. And then the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to crash.
Kind of talk me out of this.
No, I'm just trying to make sure you understand reality. people that flew with these really, really wanted, I mean, crash an airplane every now and then did not dishearten them at all, right? Everything that goes up will come down one way or another. So that's just something you got to be prepared for when you fly airplanes. So when I got into the ham radio hobby, ham radio was great because you never crash a radio. Now you can, like, burn up the tubes in an amplifier, but it's nothing like planting something that you worked on for weeks to get built. And you can destroy it in a matter of seconds. It's just something you got to get used to. It can happen. It will happen.
Talked to a guy yesterday, and he was telling me, he says, you need to take your a paper bag, and I said, yeah, for all the pieces when it crashes. He says, yep. So, anyway, so, I look forward to messing with this thing. I mean, it'll be a little bit of a challenge, but, I mean, heck, that's one reason I'm doing it, because, it's there, and I want to hear it run, I want to see it fly. If it crashes, it crashes.
That's the right attitude to have. I remember one of those when I was just getting started, when I joined up at WCRC, and I think that opened in 64, and I didn't, like, join it till I was, like, in school. But anyway, I remember putting together a SIG commander, and I spent weeks and weeks and weeks building that. And I took it out there to a guy named Dave Myers. He was my instructor. And he took it up, and he lost track of it. There were a lot of people flying it that day. It was crowded. There was a rule, couldn't be more than 8 or 9 people flying in the air at the same time. And I think it was packed. I think it was full. And he lost it. He couldn't see. And he was watching another airplane when mine was crashing. He buried it nose down, full throttle, right in the dirt, just splintered it on its maiden flight. And that was the only flight that it ever made. So just letting you know that happens.
I'm trying to get a mental picture of that, but you're cracking me up. It sounds like something I'd do, but anyway, my you heard me tell the story about my dad building his plane, and took, I don't know, weeks and weeks and weeks. I don't know how long it took. It might have been months. And then they start it up, and it flies out of sight, just keeps climbing. Keeps flying straight ahead. It was a free flight plane, and gas, and they filled the tank up. Never saw it again.
Yeah, I flew free flights for quite a while before I got before I could afford a one channel with an escapement. It was just a rubber band that you wound up, and you pressed a button, and it would let the rubber band unwind a little bit. And each time it unwound, it would kick the rudder left, right, or center. Left, right, or center. So you press it once, and it go left. You press it again, it goes center. You press it again, it go right. And you only got so many presses before the rubber band completely unwound. And then you didn't get any more button presses. So the only thing you did is, if you put a lot of gas in it, like you were saying they did, you let it fly till it was almost gone, and then you press a button, and it go left, and it start coming around. And when it got straightened back out again, you press it again, and it goes straight. And then it fly back over you, and it start going the other way. And when it start getting real far away again, you press the button again, and it go right. And you let it continue to turn, until it straightened up, and you press the button again, and it goes straight again. And you had to regulate how much fuel you put in there with how many button presses did you get so that when it ran out of fuel, it wasn't far, far away because you ran out of button presses before you ran out of fuel.
N4DJC.
Hey, Jerry.
My airplane guys are talking it up. Dave, do you remember the old pulse proportional single channel stuff? I had one of those ones too.
That's graduated. That's going up from escapement, a rubber band wound escapement. Right, that's a step up from those. And that's when I went to that. I went to a three channel one of those. I had elevator, rudder, and throttle.
You know, I think it was Ace was the brand name of it, I think. And I had it on a glider, and I launched it off a slope, and wind, I mean, it got a thermal, and it, you know, I'm lucky my eyesight was good enough at that time to start circling down, because it kept going. It was like the other day or something. It was headed to Charlotte, I think.
Well, it can go a long way. They get up there and get in a thermal, and then ride with the thermal as the thermal drifts away. They can go for many, many miles. So best to put your name in there. I've heard where people called back and found them, you know, hundreds of miles away, and somebody would take the trip to drive there to get it and give them the reward money and get their plane and go back home, even if it was busted up. Go ahead, David.
Carry on. I got to jump out of here. My game starts in about 10 minutes, so I still got a little preparation to do here. Change shoes and stuff like that. I got to put on some more clothes, too. It's getting cold out here. Y'all have a good one. 73's KB4CBA. Clear.
Okay, David, good talking to you. And one of my batteries just finished charging. I'm going to get back over there and tend to my batteries again. Take care. Looking forward to the day we get out there and we all get flying. Pick it up, Jerry, W4DJW.
A good game. Whoop up on them. Yeah, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to getting out a little bit too, but it doesn't look like it's going to be happening anytime soon. But, yeah, that's interesting, Dave, about the, you know, it's like a dethermalizer. I've used those before too on hand launch gliders. I used to do them off the Hornell Dam down here. It wasn't like a little slope glider. And they'd catch a thermal or something. It'd be, sometimes I thought I might have to take one and swim after them.
Well, I remember the guys down at WCRC used to be able to launch them with the wind. Boots Blanton owned a machine shop, so he built a really nice foot pedal winch that ran off of a car battery. And I think they mounted the whole thing in a set of hand trucks, so you could just hand truck it out there to one end of the runway, and then they drove a stake in the ground to hold it to keep it from moving. And then you just pull the line back. And I think they had a radio control for making the winch pull the airplane up. So it was a foot pedal. But where you were with the airplane in your hand, you'd press the foot pedal, and then you'd hold your airplane, and the rubber band it had a rubber band leader on it, and it would start stretching. And they'd hold it, and they'd hold it, and they'd hold it, and then finally they'd launch it. And what they do, once they launched it, they'd let the winch pull it forward, and they wouldn't unhook it. They'd let the glider, with the wind that was blowing on it, go pull up and back, and it would unwind the winch. And then they'd hit the winch again, and they'd pull it up for another run to get even higher. And then they'd let the wind, like a kite, going up in the air, going higher and higher and higher. And then once they got it as high as they could get it, where the winch line was almost vertical, they'd cut loose of the winch line and roll it up with their foot pedal, and fly for an hour. It'd be so high up there. They'd have plenty of time to find a thermal and just stay up there for hours. They had a blast. I never really got into that, but I was out there while they were doing it, so I learned how they did it. W4DJW.
JC, we had those when I lived in Southwest Georgia. It was so flat down there. Instead of peanut fields and open spaces, and you could see for miles in all directions. And a couple of guys had those. They had a powered one like that with a car battery, and also used just a regular catapult type launch. And one of the guys had a gorgeous scale sailplane. It was a Grobner. We had a glass fuselage, and it was gorgeous. I think the wingspan was well over 100 inches. It was a big glider. But you had the scale pilot in it, and had airlines. It was just something. And it would go up there, and I understood why so many of them were big, because if you use, the biggest thing I flew was about 80 inches. If you flew something 72 or 80 inches, I mean, that thing, unless it was bright, that thing would get out of sight and hurt. You couldn't see the darn thing.
Well, that's one other way that we launched them. I built a cradle on top of one of my little small airplanes. Well, small. It had a 4-foot wingspan. That's kind of small. But it had 46 engines. Power-to-weight ratio was a whole lot of power and very little weight. So I put a little platform that would hook onto the wings with rubber bands. And you set it on the wings of the fueled plane. And then you set the glider's wings on top of that little cradle. There was a latch that they could use their hook, the same hook that they used for their winch. They put that same hook under there, and I had a rubber band that would pull that tight and hold it to that platform. And then I just start going forward with my airplane, with the powered plane, and I go up high, really, really high. They'd get to the point to where they wanted to separate. Then I would pull the throttle back. They would give their glider elevator, and they would release it. They'd decouple it, and then my plane would start falling because the power wasn't on. It'd just fall away from them, and then they would lift off of the launch pad. And this was like 1,000 feet up in the air, and we'd separate. And I'd just come back down to the ground and go grab another glider and carry that glider up there. That was a whole lot of fun.
Like, I read about those things, but I don't think I've ever seen one in use. That was a time when I was involved in it. Early back in the 60s and 70s, and then I got interested in it again must have been mid 80s, and then I just kind of dropped off the end of the earth and did some other stuff. But I remember reading about some of those systems I want to say it was Model Builder magazine. I don't know if you remember that one. It was kind of an unusual mag, RC mag. It wasn't quite as glossy as some of the other ones, but it had some good construction articles and electronic articles in it, too. A lot of it was more geared for RC, for free flight, and that sort of thing as well. But I've seen those. I've seen drawings of those. I've seen photos of them, I think, Dave. But it's been so long ago, I don't remember exactly how they operate. That's a good description of it. That's an ideal way to get a small glider up.
Well, that wasn't a system that you purchased or anything like that. That was just them asking, what would it take to use that airplane to get them up in the air? And I went home and built the little cradle. All right, just designed it in your head and built it and took it out there, and lo and behold, as long as you get the two center of gravities pretty close so that one center of gravity isn't, like if, for example, the glider is center, if it's back behind the center of gravity of the airplane that's doing the towing, then when those wings start getting air underneath of them on the glider, it starts lifting. And it'll point the other plane down to the ground, and it'll bury it in the ground, right? Or if it's too far forward, it'll pick up the nose of it, and it'll make it start doing loops. So you gotta get those two center of gravities right there, one on top of the other, so that all the lift goes up across both airplanes at the same time. One doesn't torque one over and make it roll under or make it roll over or loop under or loop over. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. Well, I got to fill out this spreadsheet for work, so I keep talking and I don't fill it out. That means I got to work longer and longer. But good talking to you, Jerry. I'm going to get this knocked out so I can wrap up this day. But good talking to you. Enjoyed it. W4DJW.
See you later, Dave. Have a good evening. I don't want to stop anybody from doing any work. But there'll come a time when you'll be able to do something else, you know, in the future, I hope. Because I enjoy not having to worry about it anymore. It makes the days go by slower sometimes, but it's peaceful anyway. Have a good evening. W4DJW and 4DJC.
I enjoyed it. W4DJW, clear.